Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples.
Anyone else feel like they're talking like this time of year and sneezing and coughing and annoying your family while you're watching TV like I'm sure I do?
Well, yeah, I know that I am because my kids tend to tell me. Luckily for those of us who live with these symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease in as little as a half an hour, by the way. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
I don't know if you've ever heard of a place called Costco, but I happened to be one day, I think I was in World Market, which I sometimes go in there just, you know, to like get wine, whatever it is. And I was like, you know what? I think that I'm going to go and join Costco. I was a member like 100 years ago and I never really went. I think I went like one time. I forgot what that place was like. And I'm going to start with when I walked in and I was like, I'm not a member. I felt like I was going into a nightclub, and they showed me where the membership director was. So I then went and I was like, hey, can I sign up for a Costco card? She then tried to like upsell me for a good like 20 minutes onto like a premium membership. And I was just like, no, I just want the basic membership. She hated me by the end. She purposely took a bad picture of me. I mean, the picture is like the worst picture I've ever seen. Not like I'm going to show people my Costco card. Then I go in to the big giant room with my big giant cart. And I felt this, I've kind of felt the same feelings that I feel when I go into a casino in Las Vegas. It's like this feeling of like, oh my God, there's a bunch of slot machines. And where do I go first? Because I'm an old lady and I love slot machines in Vegas. I am about to bring in my friend Amy to talk about Costco because she's my guest. And she is going to, well, let's talk about Costco, Amy. Are you a member, first of all? Well,
I don't go into Costco because it gives me anxiety. Like, it's just too much for me. So my husband's the Costco shopper. I actually have never been a member. I've never been a member. And I didn't realize that I couldn't use his membership card. So
you can't.
There was one time when I was in a little pinch here, actually in the South Bay, when Mia was probably about, that's my oldest daughter, she's 5 now, but she was probably about, I want to say 18 months. And I needed something specific. I can't remember what it was, but I went in there like, I have to get it from Costco. And I got to the checkout and Mia was just a mess and they refused to let me buy anything. And it was like, I got in and I had one of those moments of like, I just, sheerly, I just completely embarrassed myself. Like I had like kind of a mommy tantrum in the
line. They wouldn't let you go in because it was an emergency.
I have a baby. Can I just buy this one thing that I'm trying to buy? Nope, can't do it. And I just kind of stormed out of there. I was mad. And I was embarrassed for myself, but whatever. I learned.
Very, very strict policy at Costco. And I have now been informed. I will never need toilet paper again for an entire year. I will never need paper towels again for an entire year. I somehow almost like bought a giant container of trail mix that I was like, where would I even put this? The sample people really, really kind of freaked me out. They really pushed those samples on you. And I just, you know, I what is exciting is that I will not need detergent, paper towels, or toilet paper for a year, I think. And, but I have no plans on really using my membership anytime soon. Plus, they yelled at me when I was leaving because I didn't understand that you're supposed to leave the big things in the cart and the small thing. It's a whole thing. It's a whole thing.
You're supposed to know what you're doing.
Right? Yeah. So anyways, any tips on Costco, you guys send them to me. I talk a lot about how much therapy saved my life and how lucky I am to have my amazing therapist, Dr. Nay. But not everybody can get an appointment with Dr. Nay. And I really wanted to break the stigma on getting help or asking for help. So that is why I partnered with a company called online-therapy.com. They have plans that start around $30 a week, and you can get weekly therapy sessions for less than $50 a week. You can also get my 20% off code by going to my website, judgingmegan.com, and you go to the therapy tab. And if you click on the link at the bottom, you can get 20% off your first month. Well, hello everyone. I want to introduce you to my guest, Amy Papanicolaou. She is a friend of mine. We're a new friend of mine. And if you saw her beautiful face right now, you would be like, I mean, I'm first of all not wearing any makeup. So I should have known, like I should have prepared myself to know today was the day that I was going to be recording with a supermodel. And what am I thinking? But I literally was like, you know, I did my Peloton. I jumped in the shower and I just didn't have time. So anyways, welcome, Amy. It's so good to see you.
Thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
So Amy is a fashion blogger, right? You do like a fashion blog and you also have an Instagram, which I'm always so jealous of because you're very technical and you know how to do those fashion reels.
Yes, those are really
fun. And it's very impressive. So before we start, what's your Instagram? So in case any of my followers or listeners want to get some tips on fashion, I would love for them to follow you.
Yeah, it's The Anders Edit. So it's A-N-D-E-R-S Edit. So it's The A-N-D-E-R-S Edit. And that's my maiden name. So,
okay. You're really good at it. You're really good at it. And you also, I think, do styling as well.
Yep, I do. Okay. I just live in my own styling business. So I go into, I do mostly wardrobe styling. So I go into people's homes and help them edit out their closet, figure out what their needs are, and kind of rebuild their wardrobe or even just dress them for special events. It just depends on whatever their needs are. But yeah, I just got kind of restarted with that this past year.
Okay. Well, I love following you. You and I kind of, I always talk about how I meet people or how we connect. I talk about a lot. The South Bay is very small, even though we live in Los Angeles, we live in like a pocket by the beach. And I think we met each other at some party or something, and then we've connected and kind of kept in touch. And I asked Amy on today because she is also a trauma survivor. I wanted to share her story of, it's a tough one and it's one of overcoming a lot of really difficult things in her life. She's very brave to come on here and share this story. And I'm just going to start, Amy, by asking you about your childhood, where you grew up, and your whole kind of backstory.
Yeah, so I grew up, I was born in Philadelphia. I grew up on the East Coast for part of my childhood. And had a very pretty, I would say, I guess, normal childhood. I mean, I think we all have things about childhood that we don't, you know, that make us who we are today. But it was, relatively speaking, I would say it was a very wonderful childhood. I love my parents. I love my sister and brother. I'm the oldest of three. We lived in Philadelphia, but we also moved around a lot. So I lived in England when I was young, really young, lived in Philadelphia area and a couple areas of that in the suburbs. So I moved to different school districts. And then we moved out to California when I was, I think, around 12, and lived in Northern California, Southern California, and Seattle. So I actually went to three high schools growing up, which was a lot. I moved like the middle of my freshman year and the middle of my junior year, and then graduated from high school up in Seattle in Bellevue, Washington.
And then your dad had the kind of job where he had to move a lot. So that's why you moved so much.
He worked in medical device startups, like when he moved out west, and that just naturally, it was kind of like working for the tech industry in, you know, the early 2000s. Companies would get acquired, he would raise funding, they would sell off, and then we move on to the next gig. So that's mainly, yeah, his job was mainly why we moved a lot.
And so moving around like that, how did that affect you? Were you able to kind of figure out like how to acclimate to different situations easily? We know how girls are. Were girls mean to you? What was that like?
It's sort of a blur, but honestly, it was hard. I mean, it was really hard. And I was actually I was a pretty shy kid. I was pretty introverted. I'm way more extroverted now. And I actually really believe that those experiences built up my confidence to be more social. And in the end, it ended up being a good thing. But adjusting was really hard and feeling like the new girl and feeling out of place. But it taught me to also have a lot of compassion for people. And I always had friends from different groups. I wasn't like the cool girl in the popular group or, you know, the theater nerd or whatever. I was friends with all of those people because honestly, whoever was kind to me, I was kind, I felt like they were my friends, you know?
Yeah.
I remember the hardest one was the middle of my junior year because I was kind of settled in. I had a posse of friends, a really cool group of friends. And, I just felt at home it was down in the San Diego area. And when I found out that they were moving me to Seattle, I was pissed. I mean, so mad at my parents, but it ended up working out because you just have to adjust. I mean, I needed friends and I wanted to feel like a sense of belonging, and it wasn't easy in the beginning, especially in Seattle. I would say a lot of those kids grew up together from the beginning. So I was kind of this California girl that came in, which in some ways was kind of cool. And then in other ways, I always kind of felt like an outsider at my last high school. And I quite frankly don't keep in touch with any of them really. I keep in touch with people from my earlier childhood days and then from college. So it definitely,
I can't imagine, what that's like. Just, I was always, I mean, I moved in high school one time and went to boarding school, but just having to kind of acclimate and learn, you know, new cities, make new friends. I'm sure that probably taught you how to deal with people pretty well.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 100%. And I felt like when I went away to college, it wasn't a big adjustment. I was just like, woo, I went to University of Arizona and I just honestly, like I had the best college experience because I just took it all in. I enjoyed it. I knew I was going to be there. Hopefully, you know, for 4 years, things can change.
But, yeah.
And I really settled in and felt like I found a place that I really loved and people. I got very fortunate that I was in a sorority house with people that are genuinely cool that I'm still friends with to this day. Cause I know that can go a different way. There's definitely like a mean girl element in some parts of the Greek system, but overall I had an incredible experience. And I think part of it was because of the confidence I built up over the years of having to move a lot.
And also those friendships, like I'm still really good friends with all my friends from college, and they just, you know, they kind of like stand the tests of time being in a situation where you're living with people and you have to, you know, like my friends and I, we all got in dumb fights, but we're still all really good friends to this day. So, okay. So you had a really good college experience, and then let's talk about once you got out of college, where did you go? Did you get into fashion right away? I think you told me you moved to San Francisco.
I moved to San Francisco. I was so funny about, I wanted to graduate and move to San Francisco and get started with my career right away. And if I could go back in time, I would travel for a year. I would have done something differently because I think I just like stepped right into the business world and didn't know what I was stepping into. But I started in PR at a PR firm, a PR agency in San Francisco that was repping like eBay when eBay was coming up. And they had a bunch of like healthcare companies and tech companies. And I just started off there in an entry-level role, living like paying the craziest rent in San Francisco during the like dot-com era, and not making any money in PR. So I did that. Then I got into tech recruiting. And so those were like kind of the short stints in my career. And then I moved on to retail. But during that time, I experienced some pretty intense anxiety. Really from the like stress level in the workplace. I've always been one of those people that I think people want to give more responsibility to because I work really hard. And I think people see a leadership ability in me. But I got to a point with the first job where I was pretty tapped out, and it sent me into kind of a fight or fight mode. And I never, well, actually I had experienced that. I wanted to touch on that in my childhood. I didn't know until I experienced this bout of anxiety, which also goes hand in hand with depression. I didn't know that I actually had experienced that in my childhood. But I now was able to go back in time and identify that, oh, this is something that's been a part of me my whole life.
How did your anxiety manifest? Like what, when you say you had anxiety, did you have panic attacks?
I started to have panic attacks and I would come into work and I would be frozen looking at my computer screen. Like I cannot do work today.
But what were your panic attacks like? Like everybody that, like, I mean, I talk about this openly. I have severe panic attacks and I'm on medication for them. Did you have trouble breathing? Like
I could,
what were they like? How did you, cause everybody's different.
For me, it's like heart racing and I feel like I'm out of body, like an out of body moment. I mean, there probably were times when I had a little bit of trouble breathing, but it wasn't like, I didn't feel like I was having a heart attack or hyperventilating, but it was definitely like this overwhelming feeling of, I can't do this. I need to get out of here. Like, I just wanted to run. I wanted to escape from it. And I also have a very harsh self-judgment about it too. So I would be sitting there like, what's wrong with me? Like, why am I doing, you know, which I think that part of my struggle has been more intense with depression, if I'm going to be really honest. I mean, I think they go hand in hand, but
yeah, they do.
The constant negative self-talk. I mean, it's like, I'm already in panic mode and my body's in fight or flight, which is chemically like imbalanced. And I didn't know this at the time, but then I'm beating myself up on top of it for having that feeling, which is, you know, it's so sad when you think about it. It actually brings me to tears because it's a very normal, like psychological thing that can happen and a chemical imbalance that can happen to your body from stress, you know? And that's what it was. It was, I was working a ton, working around the clock and I wasn't giving myself a break and I stopped taking care of myself and everything was about work, you know?
And you were really young too. So how do you remember like looking back? Cause you're saying you also experienced it in childhood.
Yeah.
Were the moves, like when were you experiencing the panic attacks in childhood?
So I don't know if I remember specifically panic attacks. Well, there's a couple scenarios, but one specifically that stood out to me that I addressed in therapy as I got into therapy when I had these bouts as a young adult is I remember I moved, it was, can't remember which school. I think I might have just moved to San Diego. So it was my second high school. And I used to go to the summer camp in Michigan. My mom's from the Midwest, and there's an overnight camp she used to go to growing up. And it's an amazing place on Lake Michigan. And so I would do this program where you go like backpacking and cycling, and you just like camp out for this trip I was going on was for 2 weeks, I think. And in order for me to go and attend, I had to finish school early. So I had to take my finals early. I'm like new to the school, taking my finals early. You know, that's a lot on a teenager. And I got to the camp and was feeling okay. But I found out as we embarked on our trip, our cycling trip, that the kids in the group were actually responsible for leading the way and making the decisions of the trip. And the camp leaders were just there to kind of guide us. And I was with a bunch of inexperienced campers, and I was pretty inexperienced, but compared to the rest of the group, I had more experience. So these other kids were looking at me for all the decision-making, like, where should we go? Where are we going to camp out? Should we camp out behind this church? And I could just start to feel it build and build and build. And I remember being on my bike, and my face, I think the counselor said my face was like just white as a ghost. And she looked at me and she's like, are you okay? And she thought I was having like maybe low blood sugar. So I like had something to eat to kind of help me. And it wasn't helping. I mean, I felt like I could not go on the trip. I was feeling what I now know is probably I was having some kind of panic attack, and I was frozen. Like I just could not go forward. I couldn't go forward.
It sounds to me too, like you realized from a young age, just like that you probably were like a perfectionist and put a lot of pressure on yourself just because like having to be the certain way and, you know, like move all the time and then leave college, get right into a profession, you know, and have a job, like all of this stuff. That happens. I talk about this a lot. Like our childhoods really they make us and follow us into our adulthoods. And really, honestly, there's no way that you can ever escape what you've gone through in childhood because everybody has a different experience, but some people can deal with them in different ways. Yeah. Some people can go through really hard times or loss or whatever it is and just maybe they're fine, but it everything comes back, and I hate to say to haunt you, but it does. And then it's like how you deal with it and how you get help in your later life to evolve into the human being that we're all supposed to be. Because I really believe that life is like a whole series of tests. I've said this before on the podcast. So you're given tests throughout life, right? And the way that you deal with a test is how you react, what you do. And then at the end of your life, because I am spiritual, I believe that God's like, okay, like I gave you these shitty tests that you had to go through. I'm sorry, but this is how you evolved and became the person that you are today.
100%. I ended up going back to the camp, which was a big blow to the ego. I mean, if you're going to be honest, and I felt so shitty about myself. They sent me back because they thought I had a physical problem, like I was having a heart issue. This is where I get passionate about anxiety and depression, because that's not what was happening. They sent me to a camp doctor. The doctor's like, you're totally fine. And I don't remember if they said you were probably having some anxiety or a panic attack, but that's what it was. And so I never finished the trip. I stayed back, and that killed me. I mean, I felt I remember trying to explain it to my parents, and they didn't get it. And I remember we had a family reunion after, and I felt so out of place and just awful.
I
failed.
You were a failure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that must have been really hard on your teenage self.
It was really hard. Like I think about it, I want to give myself at that point just like a huge hug.
Yeah.
Why am I crying right now? Because I actually have talked about it in therapy. But they're just, I know there were other, there were other little things throughout my young childhood that came up like that, where I was afraid to take risks and try things. And I think, but, and then internally I would beat myself up about it. And that was a habit that just was ingrained into me, that I ingrained in myself. Cause I don't think, I really don't think it, I think it was my own inner critic that then, as you were saying, to tie it all back around, came up for me in adult life, where you're in a performance setting, a high performance setting, intense work environments. I mean, I worked, you know, at that PR firm. I worked at a tech recruiting firm that was just a chop shop. It was actually a pretty bad place to work. And then I got into Gap for 10 years. Gap was a wonderful place, but Gap Inc. is, you know, pretty intense company, and
it's a pressure cooker. All of these things, if you, because I, yeah, you know, like I talked about and we've talked about before, I suffer from anxiety and depression, and I was in corporate America, and I was in sales and for a really long part of my life. And then I got to the point where I had a boss that was extremely, right during COVID, extremely verbally abusive. Like, she would say horrible things to me during COVID. And I was like, I can't do that. Like, I legitimately thought I was going to die. I would wake up at night and think that I was dying. And I just was like, said to my husband, and that's why I really got myself at that point. That was my breaking point of being like, okay, I'm in therapy. I need to like dive into therapy. I need to make the conscious decision to move forward, and I can't go back to that life. I can't do it. And it sounds to me like you were in a similar experience where it was like just so much, right?
Yeah. So it's interesting. So I had that little bout. I say little because it wasn't as big as the other bouts. My first job, my second job, I actually was sort of, I was basically let go. It was like after many rounds of layoffs and the dot-com crash and 9/11, mm-hmm, when I was working at a recruiting firm, and my boss said, if you had the option to opt out, what would you do? And of course I was like, well, I would opt out, and I was in tears. And then he basically let me go with no notice, no severance, nothing. And I'm living in San Francisco with crazy rent. I mean, that put me into a tailspin of depression and anxiety, and I got really bad. I took some more pills than I should have of some kind of antidepressant. It wasn't enough to do anything to harm me, but it was a cry for help.
And what happened?
It wasn't a suicide attempt, because I thought it would just make me, what I will say, and I'm going to get into the suicidal thoughts and all that with another, mm-hmm, part of the story, but in this situation, I knew it wasn't going to kill me. It was, I just want to sleep. Like, whatever it was, I just wanted to sleep, and I just wanted to escape. And it was a cry for help. And my ex-boyfriend at the time was checking on me. And he's like, what did you do? And I said, I took some extra pills. And I told him, and he came and got me, and they brought me home to my parents' house. And I went into therapy. And I mean, it was so hard. And my parents are like, I love my parents so much, but they were like, it was like they were looking at somebody that wasn't their child. They just couldn't believe it, you know? I remember one time I went into therapy with my parents, the first bout I had, and my dad looked at me and was like, this isn't even like my daughter. I don't know who this is. Like, cause I really think that, and that was hard to hear, but what he's saying is like, anxiety and depression can take hold of you and be so powerful that you are a shell of who you are, like a shell of yourself. It's pretty powerful. And the fact that there's such a stigma around it still is just mind blowing to me, because so many people experience it. But in this second bout, I got more help. I never really found a therapist in the early days of this that I really latched onto, but I did the work as much as I could at the time.
What So when you took the pills, going backwards a little bit, how did you get those pills? Were you on an antidepressant at that time?
It was an antidepressant that I was on. I'm pretty sure.
Okay, so you had already been in some kind of therapy at that point.
I think I was, but it was one of those. Yeah. And this is the other thing that kind of gets me about mental wellness is that I went to a psychiatrist who gave me pills right away.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, like, therapy is everything. Like, the guy knew me for like 2 minutes and he's giving me, you know, a drug, which I believe in that those medications work. And I know they do. And they've worked for many of my friends and I am a supporter of it, but I wasn't getting the help I needed, clearly. You know,
it's like putting a Band-Aid on. I mean, that's why I've talked about this as well, is why I was so anti getting put on medication, because I was put on medication as a kid because I had gone through a lot of loss and I hated it. I hated the way it made me feel. And I agree. Therapy, I talk about it a lot, saved my life. My therapist, Dr. Nay, saved my life. And I'm in a therapy, and I also talk to a psychiatrist. So I know exactly what I need to be on. I'm on a very low dose of something that helps me control my panic attacks.
So
and I think, like, you and I both have similar paths where you talked about, it kind of breaks my heart, to be honest with you, that you were a perfectionist, it sounds like. Your parents saw a picture of what you were putting out there, and you always had kind of let yourself go with the punches and go along and, you know, be a certain way and move and then go to college and make friends and then go to get like a job because that's what you thought you should do. So there's a pattern of like perfectionism. And when you finally got to the point where you were like, I want to take my mask down. I can't anymore. That's when it really affected you. And so then you went, got put on the medication. They probably gave you the wrong one.
Yeah.
You wanted to zone out, took the pills.
My doctor gave me like three different kinds. I mean, it takes six to 8 weeks before it, I mean, at least back in the day, I don't know what it is now, but for it to even kick into
your system. It depends on the medication. Yeah.
Right. At the time, because this was like, you know, back in the early 2000s, like, I mean, it was like a 6 week period before you could feel leveled out. And then even then you might need to adjust your medication levels. So I was panicking because I wanted it to be fixed, but I didn't get it at the time. You know, now I get that there's a lot of work and also just time that you have to allow, you have to move through all of your feelings, your emotion. You have to get through it. You have to get yourself through it. That's the difference. I think I learned over the few bouts is that no one's going to fix this for me. I've got to take care of myself and look deep within myself and allow myself to heal and move through this, or it's going to keep coming back and biting me in the ass.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that. It's like your mental health is you can hide it. It's not like wearing a cast on your arm or having a broken leg. You can hide, you can fake it. And I have always been very good my whole life on faking because I'm funny. I like to cut jokes or crack jokes. I like to make people laugh. It's my favorite thing. But inside, when you and I are dealing with similar situations, you're dying inside.
Yeah.
And nobody can see it. And you can continue to run away from it, but it's always going to come back to haunt you.
Yeah.
So then you had that attempt, or what, not technically an attempt, but a cry for help, went with your parents. And then what happened?
So I ended up having to move home anyway, just because, I mean, I couldn't pay rent in San Francisco. I was barely making enough money to do that in the first place, and kind of kept going to therapy, got my feet back on the ground, got a retail job just like as a side thing, like to try to then get another real job. But then that ended up turning into my retail fashion career, which actually worked out really well. And I met my husband, my previous husband, because I'm with my second husband now. a few months after that. And my life was good, you know, for a while, until I realized I married the wrong guy. And then, I kind of knew pretty soon in the relationship that it was not going to work out. And then I was continuing to climb up the corporate ladder with a lot of stress, but I didn't have any bad bouts then. And even, and then I ended up getting a divorce, and even with the divorce, it didn't kick me into depression. I actually felt relieved.
Yeah. How long were you married?
We were married for about 3 years, I think, 3.5 years. And we were together for a total of about 7 years.
Okay. And you were in what part of the country at this point?
I lived in the East Bay of San Francisco.
Okay.
Most of my time has been up in the Bay Area since college. And then I moved down here about 6 years ago.
Okay. I love San Francisco.
Yeah.
It's my favorite. So then you kind of got to a point where you were like, okay, I'm not supposed to be with this person. Your career was good. Things were good.
I mean, it was stressful. Yeah. I mean, work had its normal stress, but I actually was in a really good place with work, and they were actually very supportive, the team that I was with at the time. And I had to do a lot of healing and kind of self, I kind of call it my eat, pray, love phase of my life, where there was a lot of soul searching happening during that time between husbands. I met this guy who was kind of a hippy dippy, in a very cool way, guy who's like a Qigong master. He was studying Chinese medicine, and I had some adventures with him, which was really fun, and was like in love with him, but knew that I wasn't going to end up settling down with him. I got roped back into an ex-boyfriend who I was a high school boyfriend who was bad news for me. And that was another lesson. I remember I went to visit him for New Year's, and he just like kind of broke my heart again, was like, this isn't going anywhere. But what I realized in that moment is like, I need to stop settling with guys. And I remember I started crying when he told me like, I'm not gonna be able to give you what you want. And I was crying all the way to the airport in Seattle, and then all the way back down to San Francisco. And when he was dropping me off the airport, he's like, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to do this to you. And I'm like, this has nothing to do with you. This is me realizing that I need to not settle anymore in my life with men, you know? And that was a big pivotal moment for me, because I think I released a lot of negative self-worth energy just out. Mm-hmm. Like, nope, not settling anymore. And the universe is a crazy thing.
It sure is. And it sounds like that was like another test, Amy, that you had to go through. The story is I love how you met your current husband. It's a great story.
So that was just a wild. So as soon as I released that energy, I swear, just started. I remember that I was like, you know what? I'm going to start online dating. I'm going to set up my online profile, which I was refusing to do. And, I had plans with my best friend, like this was like in February. So a month or month and a half after that whole New Year's incident, to set up my online dating profile. And then I just happened to have this like random night out, happy hour with a friend that turned into like a long night out of like bar hopping through the marina in San Francisco. And we were going to turn in, we went to Pizza Orgasm. I could have a slice of pie, of course. And then we were going to turn in, and my friend who's 10 years younger was like, let's just go back. I'm like, no, let's go out for one more drink. So we went to Balboa Cafe, and I walked in the door, and three tables in was Nick, my now husband. And he saw me walk in, and he stood up, and he was like, I could see him in the corner, like out of the side of my eye. And he kind of like leaned over, and he's like, Amy Anders, Nick Papanicolaou, you know? And it was instant. I looked at him, and I'm like, oh my God, I remember you. And I was thinking to myself, yeah, that's the kind
of
guy.
Did you guys know each other?
So we knew each other in college. He was a couple years ahead of me, and we had a lot of mutual friends. He was really close with girls in my sorority house that were 2 years ahead of me. And I actually met him. The first time I met him, I was dating one of his best friends, and we went out for burgers one night, and he met me then. And I ended up breaking up with that person. And he, my sophomore year, called up my sorority house because we didn't use cell phones. That's how old I am.
And me too.
He called up my house and asked me out on a date. His dad gave him tickets to see James Taylor and was like, take somebody out on a proper date. Because at U of A, you don't go on proper dates. You just go on date dashes and out to bars. And
yeah, so yeah.
He called up and I said, actually, I can't go because I have to study for a test. And then I went downstairs and my friends were having like a smoke break outside. And I told my one girlfriend and she's like, what are you doing? Go out with him. He's so cute. And you guys would have so much fun. So I'm like, you know, you're right. So I called him back and said, I actually want to go. And he said on his end, he was in his head going, you said no to me. And now you think I'm going to go.
Yeah.
Of course we did. And we had a lot of fun, but nothing happened. And he always joked around like, I thought for sure when I saw you out at Dirtbags the next time, like it was going to be on. Like,
isn't that interesting how you're two? So I talk about this a lot. Like, I think like my husband and I, when we met, we locked eyes. We were two souls that were really supposed to be together. I believe in that. And I think that people come in and out of your life for different reasons. And you guys were just supposed to be together, but it wasn't your time, you know?
Yeah.
So then you got married. And then where were you mentally throughout this whole process?
I was in a very good place. When I got married though, there was the division I was working for inside of my company was going through a major, major shift. They ended up cutting the staff in half. I was one of the remaining few original like team. And it was pretty high intensity. Like, the business was struggling and they wanted a big turnaround. And I was one of the few people that they kept to kind of help that. And then they brought a new team over and it was building and building. So my stress level was getting there, but I was about to get married and go on my honeymoon. So I wasn't like, we weren't at the height of all of that stress. So we had a blast on our honeymoon. Our wedding was a blast. It was like a party, a U of A reunion. And then we went away for a couple weeks and I came back and it just kept getting worse. And I mean, it was just really intense. And I thought I've sort of had moved past, and Nick knew about my anxiety and depression bouts. I told him all about it before we got married, but I honestly thought that was behind me. Cause it had been at least like 10 years since I had a bad bout. Even like through my divorce, I had some anxiety and some depression, but it wasn't to the point of like where I needed some serious help. And my body just got into that fight or flight mode. And I was a shell of myself. I mean, Nick was like it was, you know, it's hard for someone who hasn't seen you like that. Like he's never seen me like that dark and down and intense. And it was hard for him to watch. And I could tell he was like, what is happening? And we had just gotten married. So you're just like, holy, I'm sure he was like, what the fuck did I just do?
Yeah.
Cause it's scary to see someone you love go through that, you know?
And but it just you can't control when these things, that's no. the thing. It's like, you no. can't, and you he can't knows. Control when it's going to happen. It's like no. not no. anyone's fault. And
like one of the lessons of it that I don't even think I'm into it now, even though I think I have the better tools now.
Mm-hmm.
So it was getting worse and worse. And it just felt like every time I went to work, there was just everything was constantly changing. The strategy was changing. What I was doing wasn't right. Like, or it was right, or it was against my gut. I can't explain to you, but what I will tell you is I had a lot of friends that worked there that were single, living in San Francisco, quitting without any other job lined up. Cause it was that the environment was that bad. And somebody said it was like, it's like changing the wiring and electricity when the electricity is still on, like that quote of like, it just was your hair is on fire kind of environment. And so I decided I needed to take a leave of absence, which was really hard for me to do, but I knew I needed to take care of myself. And I started to get therapy while I was there. And when I look back, what I learned is that I think I could have worked through it and stayed at work. But I honestly let it take control of me. And I let that anxiety take hold and be in charge, which I think it's a hard thing to say, but I really believe that the only way through anxiety is through it, mm-hmm. not avoiding it. Cause when you avoid it, it gets worse. And that's what happened. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I left, I was going to take a couple months off. I think I ended up taking 3 months off. Fortunately, I had great benefits. Not everyone's privileged enough to have that when you are in these crisis situations, but I was not okay. And the therapist I had was good. But I don't know that I felt like it was helping. And I was starting to have suicidal ideation at home while Nick was at work. And it got to the point where I was starting to have like thoughts of throwing myself off. We lived in a high-rise building, mm-hmm. throwing myself off a balcony. This is a person who just got married to mm-hmm. like the love of my life. And I'm thinking about ending my life. It was just, it just shows you how like crazy it can get where you are literally not yourself. You're a shell of yourself because you're chemically off balance. It was wild. And I remember talking to my therapist and she's like, if you continue to have these thoughts, you need to check yourself into the hospital. So I kept having the thoughts and I don't think I ever would go through with it, but I felt like I was desperate to get help and I didn't know that there were probably some other options. And so Nick drove me to the hospital and they put me on a 5150 hold, a psychiatric hold, which I still even didn't know what was happening when I was there. I just was desperate to have someone help me because I wanted to be better. And I wanted my husband to be okay. And I wanted us to be okay. And I was fearful that I was going to lose my husband after I just got married to him, you know, it was crazy. And when I got there, I'm like, I started to panic. And I remember Nick was kind of almost mad because he's like, I don't understand like what's happening. And I wanted to like walk back out of the hospital and leave. And once you get in there and you check yourself into the ER, it's done. You have to be under someone's care for 3 days. And it was one of the scariest moments of my life. I mean, I remember saying goodbye to Nick and they're like rolling me in. You know, you feel like you're like a crazy person. I'm not a crazy person, just someone who is mentally unwell. And they roll me to the elevator and I look, I mean, because they were transferring me to a facility. And I just remember thinking, what the fuck is happening right now? This is crazy. And so I got checked into this place and talk about a reality check. I mean, the people, there were so many unwell people. I mean, they were all unwell. Obviously they're there, but I met people that have been there several times. Like these are people that some people bipolar, like you name it, the whole gamut. And it's just, it was such a crazy experience, but it also put things into perspective pretty fast. Like, okay, yeah. Like I'm going to be okay. I remember talking to the psychiatrist there and she was like, Amy, you're totally going to be okay. Like you're going to be fine. Just keep going. You have to go to like group sessions there. There's a lot of group therapy. You meet people. There's a lot of like kind of free time, but it's a very, there are some warm parts about it. And there were some really cold, sterile parts about it. But I met some amazing people there. My parents, I'm telling you this right now, my parents don't know the story, but they will before this gets published because I want to tell them, but I didn't tell my family. Only Nick knew, and then one of my best friends. So I would call.
Okay, I just want to say one thing, because this makes me emotional. It's when you are having the thoughts of not wanting to be on this planet. I've openly talked about it on the podcast. it's almost like you're in a prison in your mind. And you were newly married. Everything had everything going for you from the outside. But yep. when you're a prisoner in your own mind, you know, I talk openly about going through, you know, I was having suicidal ideations as well. I couldn't get it out of my mind. Every night I would go to bed 2 years ago and I would be like, oh my God, why am I thinking this? What do I do? What do I do? And I would tell my husband, and he was like genuinely worried about me. But what I will say looking back on it is it took guts. It took guts for you to do what you did. And anybody that's listening to this, that's judgmental, which I don't think all of my listeners are cool. People listen to this because they could be struggling mentally. They've gone through something. I don't have any listeners that are, would, I don't think ever be judgmental of you telling this story. I think the reason you're telling it is in case somebody is going through these same thoughts. This is what your experience was and what you chose to do. And what you chose to do, Amy, is extremely brave. And what you also chose to do just by being on this podcast is extremely brave, because it takes a lot of guts for somebody to tell this story and be honest and real. Most people wouldn't. So I just wanted to stop you right there and say that. And I think once you tell your parents, your whole life is going to go to a whole new level.
Yeah.
And you're going to be free.
I think so.
I just had to say that.
No, I appreciate you saying that very much. I mean, that was kind of an out of body experience. Even when I left, I mean, it was only 3 days that I was there. I talked to the doctor that I mentioned before, and she was like, you're good to go. You don't need to be here, but I highly recommend you get into an outpatient program. And that's kind of where you should have probably have been in the first place. But you know, this is where we are, you know? And I believe that I needed to do what I did. Like I needed to, I think that everything that led up to that moment needed to happen. Everything that's happened since then needs to happen for me. And this is my story. So I went into an outpatient program that is centered around dialectical behavioral therapy. And the core-ness of it is the core foundation is mindfulness and being like present with your life and really learning how to emotionally self-regulate. I can't remember all the ins and outs of it, but it's actually a pretty effective program that I think is used for people with pretty intense mental disorders, but I think it can help anyone. And I was with people that we were supposed to be like sort of the less severe group. And then there was a more severe group with mental disorders. And I was still with people that were, I mean, we lost there are two people in the group that have since died to a drug overdose and suicide. So obviously they were in very serious, they had serious mental health issues that they just couldn't beat. And which is really sad, but it was a whole range of people as far as, you know, mental struggles. But I found the program to be pretty effective and I did it for several weeks from what I can recall. And it helped me get my feedback.
But it's a tool that you found, because I always like to hear about tools that people use. Were you also put on medication, and did you find a therapist that was a good fit?
So I ended up doing I did that program for several weeks, I think, and I didn't end up getting a one-on-one therapist. I was on anti-anxiety medicine for a while. I know I took Xanax, and then there was something else I was taking, and there was a doctor there that they had that I was accessible to, a psychiatrist that I would check in with throughout the program. I just don't remember exactly what I was taking, but it was sort of like I took it for a while and then tapered off. Once I got into a groove back at work and I felt like I didn't need it anymore. The biggest thing for me was coming out of that therapy, I faced the music and went back to work. I took on a different role, but I got back there, and they were actually, you know, very supportive. I can't say anything negative about it. It was the first day was so hard for me internally, but honestly, everyone treated me with respect, and it wasn't, if anything, like a couple of the leaders there were like, we respect you for, they don't know that what all this stuff that happened, of course, but they respected me for being so honest. 'Cause I was honest. I said, I think I need a break. Like I need to get some help. And, that was hard enough to do. 'Cause I felt like I was a little like, I felt defeated a little bit. Like I'm losing out on your, I don't know, you're coming in and changing this business. And in some ways I felt like I was failing, but you know what? I don't feel like I failed because I faced it and went back. And I think that was a very important part of my story, was going back and showing myself that I could get through this. And actually it turned out to be pretty good and things were getting better. And then of course, like they ended up shutting that division down at Gap. And that's why I ended up looking for jobs down here to stay in fashion e-commerce. And I ended up working with Revolve down here. And that's why I moved down here. But
shout out Revolve. I love Revolve. But I wanted to really quickly talk about what, so then you got pregnant, you have two kids. Did you have this depression under control? You had new tools. Did you experience postpartum?
So I was totally prepared. I even told my OBGYN, I have had struggles with anxiety and depression. I really want to be on top of my mental health after I have this baby. And I never ended up having, I didn't have postpartum depression, fortunately for me, with either baby.
So you ended up not having to deal with postpartum depression, and you have probably had tools. And I love that you were upfront and you told your doctor ahead of time that you had battles. I think that's so important. I just did an episode with Danny Jernigan, who's a postpartum advocate and experienced extreme postpartum depression. And she talks about what she did to prepare herself with her second baby, some of the steps she took. So I wanted to touch on that because I think it is something that can happen specifically with, obviously, women deal with it. And just finding ways to be able to overcome it is so important.
I mean, it's a real thing. And I can see how it can very easily happen too, because your hormones are all out of whack.
Especially when you have a history of anxiety and depression. I had it really badly with Sophie, my oldest. So now that you're in the place that you're in right now, how are you doing mentally? Are you still in therapy? Do you have tools that you use?
Well, I was gonna
talk about that.
I was going to say I have a 1-year-old, but before I had Grant, my 1-year-old, I had two miscarriages, and my first one was at 18 weeks. And that was probably one of the most heartbreaking moments of my life. I could barely walk out of the doctor's office. I fell to my knees when I called my mom outside of the doctor's office and was like, I don't know how I'm going to get out of this mentally, because I was going to have another baby girl. And even just going through the process of, I had a D&E, a dilation evacuation. Even going through that whole process was pretty early. And what I learned from the last few times is that I need to be proactive with my mental health. So I actually got a therapist pretty immediately after that experience. And she's my first therapist, I will say, that I absolutely love. And she's here in town. And I started going to her on the regular, and I was so proud of myself for doing that, because I really think it helped me mentally recover and work through some more things. I mean, I feel like you're always working on yourself, and I don't think I'll ever not go back to therapy. But it really helped me through that period of mourning and loss. And so I just think that she's there for me when I need it. And sometimes I feel like, you know what, I need a little fine tuning. Mentally, I feel pretty good right now. As I've started to start my own business, it's very uncharted territory and can be uncomfortable at times. And then trying to figure out how to manage two kids and all that definitely causes stress. And I've had moments of anxiety, but I still feel pretty balanced right now. And one of the things that is super critical to my mental wellness, and it always goes, I always put it to the side when I'm not well, is just exercising. So walking it for me and moving my body is so important. And when I neglect that, then my anxiety gets worse. So that's one of the things. And just time alone is so important to me. So right now I feel like I'm in a good place and I feel like I have some good tools, but it's not to say that I'm not going to have, you know, other experiences where I'm going to need some help. But I can't complain right now. I think that
you have, like, sometimes there's almost an advantage where you've gone through all the things that you have gone through and now you can, you know that you have those resources. Like for me with Dr. Nay, I don't go to her now every week. You know, when I feel like I need a little bit of a break, I take a break and I'm like, right now I happen to be in a very good place. Knock on wood. Doesn't mean something could change. And I know the signs, and it sounds like you do too, where it's like, okay, this is what I have to do. And there's always kind of like an action plan. So yeah. I love that you exercise. I love that you take time for yourself. These are all things I do too. If I didn't work out every day, I think I do it for my mental health. Like I have to. If I don't work out, I feel horrible and it really affects me. Amy, I'm so appreciative of you that you came onto the podcast. It takes real guts to share your story. I know it wasn't easy for you to come out and be honest and real, but I think that if there's one thing I've learned, just doing this, I'm almost on my year anniversary of being a podcaster. People will reach out to me over things sometimes and just say, I went through such and such. This guest, I could relate to them because of whatever it was. You're helping somebody by sharing your story. And the most important thing for people to know that might be struggling is there's always help out there.
Always.
And I think that if you ever want to reach out, Amy, can you share your Instagram again? I'm also going to post it on the show notes of my episode.
Yes, it's at the THE Anders, ANDERS, edit, EDIT. Anytime you can reach out.
And you can follow me at Judging Megan too. And if you want to, reach out, it's always good to reach out to somebody that might be able to relate and we can maybe point you in the right direction. Right.
Yes.
Thank you, Amy. You're awesome.
Thank you so much.
I love seeing your beautiful, beautiful face. Keep going, Amy. You're the planet. You're helping people and the world needs you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on and I'm so lucky to know you. And I just hope that if this can help just one person feel like they're not alone, then it's done what I intended it to do. So I'm grateful.
I promise it will. I promise it will. Know that.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you. Of course. So everyone, keep living, keep praying, and keep growing. Hi, everybody. Have you heard of Instacart? If you have not heard of Instacart, I don't know where you have been living because it saved my life. I don't have to go to the grocery store. I can get my stuff delivered to my house. And if you go to judgingmegan.com/Instacart, you will get $35 off of your first order if you've never ordered before. So I would say get on there right now and skip your trip to the grocery store.